Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for June 24th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
And I'm Brother Bartholomew! No, just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Of course you are.
And this is
I thought Chip was going to do it. I thought Chip was going to do it, and he didn't do it, so I had to do it.
This certainly, I'm a very sensitive person to this one. This is talking about a bald man.
Yes. Chapter 4 is titled The Story of the Bald-Headed Man. Welcome to your life. We've set up... We'll bring in the mystery guest, everyone. Come and meet Chip.
I'll sit down in my hookah lounge. I got my hookah ready for us. I've got some incense going on, Steve, and I'm wearing some kind of crazy quilt.
What a character we've got introduced in Chapter 4, huh, Pam?
And I think it's really interesting because obviously the character is great, totally outlandish and awesome. But the setting is really interesting too. So the opening of the chapter provides us with a little bit of setting and the character. We followed the Indian down a sordid and common passage, ill-lit and worse furnished, until he came to a door upon the right, which he threw open. A blaze of yellow light streamed out upon us, and in the center of the glare there stood a small man with a very high head, a bristle of red hair all around the fringe of it, and a bald, shining scalp, which shot out from among it like a mountain peak from fir trees. Oh my goodness.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Here we go.
Beautiful representation of the bald.
This is great description. We get this character from the start. This is going to be an interesting chapter right there at the beginning, for sure.
All the actors want to play this character. Absolutely.
In my head... Okay, we haven't gotten to him actually talking yet, but he's got a really high, squeaky voice as well. But in my head, this is Clint Howard, Ron Howard's brother, whom he puts into every one of his movies somewhere. It's a fun game. Find Brother Clint. Oh, Brother Clint! Oh, Brother Clint!
Oh, my goodness.
And I think it's interesting, too, because remember that we are in a suburban house, right? One that's in the monstrous tentacles of London. And it's kind of a sordid place. It's ill-lit and worse furnished. And then we meet this guy. And then he says, oh, come on in. And it's entirely different setting. We were all astonished, Watson tells us, by the appearance of the apartment into which he invited us. In that sorry house, it looked as out of place as a diamond of the first water in a setting of brass. So everything is sumptuously decorated. There's this thick, beautiful carpeting. And then two great tiger skins thrown athwart it, the carpeting, increased the suggestion of Eastern luxury, as did a huge hookah, which stood upon a mat in the corner. And so it feels like this totally exotic Eastern luxury, right? Right in the middle of this kind of decrepit, sordid suburban household.
This could almost be where I live. I mean, this describes my house to a T.
Wow. The Eastern luxury.
Sounds more like my house. Just a bunch of junk, and then you get into my room, and it's like, oh, here's the autograph wall, everyone. Ooh.
Here's the hookah.
Pinball machine and several hookahs. Oh, nice.
I bet there's a lot of shag carpet there, and I bet when they serve their food, they serve it like the melting pot serves their food.
Fondue style?
Exactly.
That's French. That's fondue.
We've got some French coming up, my friends. Get in the mood here.
This is such a character. This is such a setting where we are seeing Doyle really working with the difference between where we were and where we're going. This is exotic, at least.
Yes. And one thing that really struck me, having recently read approximately 44 of the Sherlock Holmes short stories.
You have? This,
yeah. I don't know if you knew that about me. But this is an early intro to Sherlock and John, right? So Mary says to this man, Mr. Thaddeus Sholto, she said, this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and this is Dr. Watson. A doctor, eh? Cried he, much excited. Have you your stethoscope? Might I ask you, would you have the kindness? I have grave doubts as to my mitral valve. If you would be so very good, the aortic I may rely upon, but I should value your opinion about the mitral. I listened to his heart as requested, but was unable to find anything amiss. Save indeed that he was in an ecstasy of fear, for he shivered from head to foot. It appears to be normal, I said. You have no cause for uneasiness. Now, okay, a couple things to note here. So Mr. Sherlock Holmes means nothing to this guy. This is early days, right? This is before Sherlock is a famous detective who, like every criminal around the world, is like, ah, Sherlock Holmes, I'm caught, right? So Sherlock means nothing. And were you guys a little bit surprised that Watson brought a stethoscope on this journey? I mean, he's got his heavy stick. Sherlock's got his revolver. Why does he have a stethoscope?
Did he just grab his bag? Is this just the bag that you leave the house with? I am certainly guilty of having the bag that I leave the house with. It's in the room with me right now, by the way. And it's just got all of my things that I might need during the course of the day. A doctor might have just the bag that he picks up. We're not going to call it a purse, Chip. Don't close your mouth. It's my bag that has all the things that I need for the day.
I was going to say that, yeah, Watson may not have a lot of self-esteem. I mean, he's around Sherlock Holmes. He may just walk around the stethoscope around his neck.
I don't think so.
What I will say is this is the reason why doctors will not come to your parties anymore.
Because
right. They show up at the party and it's like, I got this spot right here.
I think we told that joke one of the shows when we were talking to Pam, because Pam is a doctor. And so I think we asked Pam at one point, can you help me with this pain that I've got right here, Pam? I'm not that kind of doctor, she said.
As a doctor of philosophy, I'm happy to give you a reading suggestion.
She goes, I will, I have nothing to say about that, but I will critique your writing.
No, I won't actually, but I'll tell you.
This is a fun character. This is a fun chapter. You forgot to mention when you were reading the words from Thaddeus that he's got a really high voice and he talks with a really high voice, or at least that was the way that we heard it when we were listening to the audiobook version with Stephen Fry doing a really funny voice for this character. Brother Bartholomew.
So immediately just think Mickey Mouse voice. That's exactly where you want to go.
Clint Howard with a Mickey Mouse voice smoking a hookah. This is
Steve, that you are going to be doing all the Thaddeus quotes in this episode.
I will read all of the quotes from this episode. It's fine.
And he threw in a little Southern accent to go with it. Good job there, Steve.
So, Stephen, why did Thaddeus Sholto not want the police to come? I just think this answer is amazing. Give it to us in your best voice.
This is great. You will excuse these precautions, but I am a man of somewhat retiring, and I might even say refined tastes, and there is nothing more unaesthetic than a policeman. I don't want a policeman in here because his uniform would clash with the interior, basically. I have a natural shrinking from all forms of rough materialism. I seldom come in contact with the rough crowd.
Oh, dear.
Steve, you've got a future right now. Let's go with this. This is the voice you're going to use.
This is for the rest of my life. This is the Thaddeus Sholto. Brother Bartholomew!
Stephen Foto reads Sherlock Holmes as Thaddeus.
But I think this is really interesting, right? Nothing more unaesthetic than a policeman. This is a very classed idea, right? This is the notion that the police are there to police the lower classes, right? These rough crowds, this rough materialism, people who work with their hands, you know? Thaddeus Sholto, he is above interactions with the police. And he's kind of making it clear, and I kind of buy it. He wasn't, you know, we were thinking, don't bring the police, like we're doing something sketchy. And he's thinking, I don't interact with the police.
Right. I am in my own little private room with my tiger skins on the floor and my hookah. I am the entire universe of my own self. I don't deal with those people.
What? And you step into his house and it's another world. I mean, it's certainly not modern.
Exactly. Britain. And he's too refined to deal with the police.
Clint Howard, refined hookah smoker.
Except he's not, right? I feel like this is Doyle at his best, creating this totally outlandish character who's completely funny and poignant at the same time. And that's what Doyle does so well throughout all of his canon.
I agree. This is one of his best characters.
Absolutely.
This might be the one that sticks with me for the rest of our 700 years of reading through the canon.
I fear that very much.
Everyone shows up to Halloween party as Tiger King, but Steve's going to show up as this guy, Thaddeus.
Clint Howard as Thaddeus Sholto.
Everyone will get your costume. I love it.
He'll spend the whole time trying to explain. Well, there's a story.
Just this is read one chapter. Chapter 4. Right,
there's a few more things going on in this chapter. Let's move forward.
Okay, good, fine.
One chip is keeping us on track, Steve.
Bad sign.
So, when we get the intro to Brother Bartholomew, which I feel like we have already previewed for you, and Major Sholto's story, it's interesting because Thaddeus isn't really thinking about Miss Morstan. So she is totally calm when she learns from Thaddeus that her father has died. Watson, quote, could have struck the man across the face, so hot was I at this callous and offhand reference. But Mary is calm and she says, I knew my father was dead. Like, even though he's the first person to actually tell her for sure.
Thaddeus says, I can give you every information. And what is more, I'm turning it to Monty Python.
That's terrible.
And what is more, I can do you justice. And I will too, whatever Brother Bartholomew may say.
Okay, now guys, when you were just reading this for the first time, were you thinking Brother Bartholomew was some kind of like religious figure, a monk or something? Uh-huh. A friar,
100%.
Right? 100%. Right, exactly. And then he explains that his father, Major John Sholto, retired to Upper Norwood after serving in India with Mary's father. And he came back with a considerable amount of money. With these advantages, he bought himself a house and lived in great luxury. And this is where
my twin brother, Bartholomew, and I were the only children.
Exactly. And so I thought it was interesting and kind of awesome that Brother Bartholomew was initially described. Like, there's a little bit of a sleight of hand there for the reader, right? Mm-hmm. Where we initially think, oh, it's some sort of religious figure. And then it's a twin brother. Now, what's the importance of twins, my friends, in literature?
One is evil. The one on the right is always evil. That's Simpsons. Simpsons counts as literature, right?
Of course it does. Culture here, my friends. Yeah. And, you know, you have the double. You have that notion of two people who share DNA, two people who are just the same, except what are the differences? And don't forget that we are at the end of the 19th century. We're just at the beginning of twin studies, which give us so much information on the nature versus nurture debate. That's always kind of close to people's minds when we talk about crime and criminality, right? How do you create criminals? Is it nature? Is it nurture? Twin studies are part of answering that question. And of course, the answer is very complicated. But you also have the twin figure is huge in Gothic literature, right? Going back to Poe, loves twins, loves the double. And so there's something like a little creepy about the twin brother Bartholomew, especially that he's been set up in this odd way.
Major Sholto was fearful. He always had two prize fighters as porters. He had bodyguards because he was always thinking that somebody was after him and his money. He had a most marked aversion to men with wooden legs.
He didn't like pirates.
Arr.
That's just creepy.
I like a lot of stuff. That's right. I've got Rocky Balboa and Apollo Creed next to me.
The man with one arm.
I run into a
guy. I didn't kill my wife. I don't care. Cam's done with us.
Now,
okay.
And now it's interesting that, well, like the deathbed scene is the best, right? But on his deathbed, he says that he should have shared his wealth with Marston's orphan, which would be Mary. But his avarice was too much, and it still is. And I love that the major, you know, as he's nearing death, he says, but send her nothing, not even the chaplet, until I am gone. After all, men have been as bad as this and have recovered. So he says, once I die, you can give away some of my stuff. But even though I'm almost dead, don't do it yet, because I could get better. We don't know. We don't know. So this is avarice. Like, we saw that miser figure in, was it the Norwood Builder?
I don't know what stories are what anymore, Pam. We have read, you've made us read so many of these stories. Yes, there was that.
I'm almost literate.
Like Scrooge.
Yes. And so I feel like we might have had two misers, but the Norwood Builder was definitely one. And we're back in Norwood. We're in Upper Norwood here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also, we're back to having that extra room, which is built right into the house. So this is interesting. Now, guys, did you guys get excited when you realized that there's a treasure hunt? A treasure hunt!
I did. That's why I said immediately it goes right back to Indiana Jones. We will now go through and find our treasure.
Right?
Yeah, this is an action-adventure sort of story for sure. This is probably more action-adventure than we've seen in most of the stories. This is definitely Indiana Jones.
There's a mysterious treasure. Ill-gotten, we're quite sure. There's a quarrel between Marston and Sholto in the dead of night. An alleged heart attack. A suspicion of murder. And then a late-night deathbed confession. And you guys, you had to love this deathbed confession, right? So he says, put your ears down to my mouth. The treasure is hidden in. At this instant...
A big W!
At this instant, a horrible change came over his expression. His eyes stared wildly, his jaw dropped, and he yelled in a voice which I can never forget, keep him out! For Christ's sake, keep him out! And they turn around, the two brothers, Thaddeus and Brother Bartholomew, and they see a face looking in through the window. It was a bearded, hairy face with wild, cruel eyes and an expression of concentrated malevolence. And then their father dies. So they run out to the garden, of course, as one does.
Immediately, we think it's a Sasquatch. That's what I went with.
Okay.
Bearded, hairy.
He always assumes it's a Sasquatch.
Just throw it out there. It could be.
I'm going to Roswell, New Mexico in a couple of days, by the way. Go check out the aliens. What were you saying, Pam?
I was saying that as soon as their father dies, the treasure is hidden in...
A big dies. W!
So they run outside, as one does upon the death of a parent. And they start looking around. And there is evidence that someone was there. So because they're like, did we just both imagine the same creepy, bearded, hairy face with the expression of concentrated malevolence? So they...
A footprint. A footprint.
Always, right? Footprint. A footprint in the flower bed, an open window, and then... Later, all of the possessions, their father's possessions, have been gone through. And there is a...
All ransacked. There doesn't seem to be anything stolen, but it was all... Somebody was very specifically looking through things for something.
And one thing is additional that was not there before, a sheet of paper with the mysterious phrase that we know because we're reading this book, the sign of the fool.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Mary has a reaction to the account of her father's death. She knew he was missing, but she was pretty sure that he was dead, but now she knows. At the short account of her father's death, Miss Morrison had turned deadly white, and for a moment I feared that she was about to faint. She rallied, however, on drinking a glass of water, which I quietly poured out for her from a Venetian carafe upon the side table. Here, Mary, here's some water.
So we learned so many things here. So first of all, Mary is a champ, right? She does not faint. She is a totally composed young woman. Also,
there was no brandy there, so she couldn't faint.
Well, fainting ladies get water, not brandy, right? So this is a very gendered thing, too. Pours her some water, whereas, you know, anyone else get any of the characters we've seen about to faint before, all men, they get brandy. And Watson is watching out for Mary now and forever, which we unfortunately know is not going to be all.
It's so sweet.
This is where the love theme comes in. Thank you, John Williams. Go ahead and place that right there, Steve.
That's right. Schulte's reading of the situation is interesting at best. So, he is such a character. Schulte has an obvious pride at the effect which the story had produced. He told this story to Mary on purpose to draw her into this mystery.
And he's a storyteller, right? Like Watson. And he likes that his story had an effect, as in, like, this poor girl almost faints because she hears of her dad's death. We do learn that he's a valetudinarian, which we all had to look up. A person who was
I had no idea what that was.
Unduly anxious about their health, what we might call, and what Watson calls later in the chapter, a hypochondriac.
So we're getting new words in our vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I look forward to using that.
He and his brother Bartholomew, weren't in total agreement, but Thaddeus convinced brother Bartholomew to part with the pearls. There was this whole conversation about, I have all of these riches, obviously ill-begotten, give her her fair share. And they're like, okay, we'll give her one pearl from this pile of treasure.
All right, and think about this. If I gave you something as odd as a monster pearl, where did you get this? Oh, it came in the mail. Yeah. How do you get rid of it? It's not like you go like, well, I'm super wealthy. I have all these pearls here that were stolen.
Right. No, and it's interesting that as he's noting that he and his brother were disagreeing, and Steve, I think I'm going to read this one due to the French. I can't do the voice, but is that okay?
Do the voice. Do the voice. Clint Howard. Think Clint Howard.
Of course.
So, Brother Thaddeus says, besides, it would have been such bad taste to have treated a young lady in so scurvy a fashion. Le mauvais goût mène au crime. The French have a very neat way of putting these things. And what that is saying that bad taste leads to crime. So...
And if anybody has ever seen people, you know, with their fashion sense, I think we would easily say that, right?
It's criminal. That outfit is criminal.
So, Brother Thaddeus basically uses this fine aphorism, which I don't really know is a real thing. But he basically convinces Brother Bartholomew, whom we have not yet met, that le mauvais goût mène au crime. Therefore, we have to give this woman something because it would be in bad taste to leave her penniless when we know that a portion of this belongs to her.
Yes, and they part with the tiniest little fraction of their ill-gotten, not theirs, their father's fortune in the most elitist way possible by sending her a pearl.
I'm wondering if Carol Baskin's learned a little bit about this. You guys didn't watch Tiger King, but she cut out the ex-wife and the ex-husband's family from the
Tiger Fortune.
Tiger Fortune, yes, from one of the fortunes.
Is it an ill-begotten fortune?
Well, I don't know if sardine oil and feeding has anything to do with it. I would say it's ill.
So now... Thaddeus tells us that, great news, guys. The reason I sent you that message, Mary, is because the treasure, which they have been looking for months since, or years maybe, since the death of their father, was just discovered yesterday. So he says, it only remains for us to drive out to Norwood and demand our share. I explained my views last night to Brother Bartholomew, so we shall be expected, if not welcome visitors. So...
I'm sorry, who?
Brother Bartholomew. No, Bartholomew. I can't cannot.
That is such a Southern name. I love that.
Oh
name.
My goodness. So
if I had sons.
So this is interesting news. I mean, we've gotten this story from this interesting character. This is such an interesting story. And the news of, oh, and by the way, the treasure has been found is so, this is very silly.
We're
stuff.
In chapter 4 of a 12-chapter book, so we're not really convinced that we're about to pull out our big loot bags and move on from here.
Dollar signs on them.
Right?
I got it.
Now, Watson has a really complex reaction to this great news that moments from now, Miss Morstan is going to become a wealthy heiress when they split the treasure between Thaddeus, Bartholomew, and herself. So here's what Watson's thinking as they get back into the carriage and start driving off to meet this wonderful brother, Bartholomew. Miss Morstan, could we secure her rights, would change from a needy governess to the richest heiress in London. Surely it was the place of a loyal friend to rejoice at such news. Yet I am ashamed to say that selfishness took me by the soul and that my heart turned as heavy as lead within me. I stammered out some few halting words of congratulation and then sat downcast with my head drooped, deaf to the babble of our new acquaintance. Because Watson, of course, has ended 2 chapters earlier by saying, I don't have enough wealth to pursue this governess, but well, at least, you know, she's a governess. She's the right age for me. She might not have huge expectations. Maybe I could meet her needs. And now he's like, wow, she just went way out of my league. Which brings us to the ending. And of course, Thaddeus, what was the word, Chip, that you were going to memorize and use at parties? Valedictorian?
That's the one. That's exactly the one that I'm going to have to write down on my inside of my hand so I can remember it.
Anyway, we don't have a lot of 7-syllable words that we just Thaddeus is the hypochondriac, right? And so in this carriage ride where Watson's emotions really get the best of him, he actually cannot, like, Thaddeus is asking him all these questions about health and he's just answering randomly. And so I love this ending. It's very funny. I trust that he may not remember any of the answers which I gave him that night. Holmes declares that he overheard me caution him against the great danger of taking more than 2 drops of castor oil while I recommended strychnine in large doses as a sedative. However that may be, I was certainly relieved when our cab pulled up with a jerk and the coachman sprang down to open the door. "This, Miss Morstan, is Pondicherry Lodge," said Mr. Thaddeus Sholto as he handed her out. End of chapter. So
what happens next?
Right. But I love the notion of Watson, right?
There's a character named Sherlock Holmes in this?
I know, right? Totally absent from this chapter.
Absolutely. Right. Completely absent. He's there. He's listening to all this happening. But we did not say his name until this last paragraph.
Steve, we're seeing, but not observing. Come on, man.
He's observing. He is quietly observing. There's no narration of what he is doing. There is no dialogue of what he is saying. He is only observing.
This is young Watson, the narrator, long before John Locke, right? He's not watching his every move and like reading like his little expressions. Oh, Sherlock knows something.
Totally distracted by a girl.
He's checking out Mary.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about Mary. Yeah, I knew you were going to say.
Oh, gosh.
I knew you were going to say.
Oh, dear. Wow. So many references in this episode. But I think that we also get this notion of Watson as a guy who like gets a little fumbly, right? When he talked about the musket looking in through the tent and he pulled out his double-barreled tiger cub. And here he's driving strychnine in large doses. And
off camera, Sherlock will be saying, "Listen, this is a story about me. You should probably bring it back
with your flowery romantic language, Mr.
Right?
Dr. Watson.
You can deal with Mary off camera."
That's right. This is so much fun. We talked way too much about this. I love a great character. This is
you
my
could have favorite. Listened to this chapter in less time than you could have listened to us talk about.
As usual. That's pretty normal.
Actually, maybe that's not the first time this
no,
has happened.
No.
But what we don't get is all that special insight and Steve getting reading
Brother Bartholomew. Oh dear. I hope you're all enjoying this as much as we are. I hope you're having as much fun as we are. If you're not, I'm sorry. I apologize in advance, but we are having way too much fun with this. We are enjoying ourselves, and I hope you are coming along with us on this ride. We would love to hear from you. What is your Brother Thaddeus voice? We would love to hear it. Give us a call, send us a voicemail, send us an email, follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes. All of your pictures of Brother Thaddeus, I would love to see Clint Howard with a hookah. Send those in. We would love to see those. Go to our dedicated website, sandwiches@irregularhours.com, for all of these silly conversations, many with voices, but not all of them. And join us tomorrow as we talk about Chapter 5 of The Sign of Four. Now there's two numbers, and I'm going to get confused. All right. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
Brother Bartholomew!